Today, I'm thrilled to be talking with Dr. Laura Markham, founding editor of ahaparenting.com, a site that provides parents with sound advice and practical tools for connecting with children of all ages. Dr. Laura is also the author of the highly acclaimed book, Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting. It is the book that I most often recommend to my readers because the contents are truly life-changing. And I am thrilled that Dr. Laura has a new book coming out on May 5th. It's called Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings, How to Stop the Fighting and Raise Friends for Life. And Laura, I just want to thank you for tackling this topic. There is not a day that goes by when I don't hear from a blog reader searching for ways to foster more peaceful and positive sibling relationships in the home. And today, I have come up with several questions that I know are just burning on the minds of my readers that we want to know about. How do we improve these sibling connections and create a more loving home environment? So I just want to thank you for giving us this time and that your insight that I know we're just going to learn so much from. So are you ready to get started?
I am. I'm so excited to be with you and your readers today, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Laura. All right, so let's start from a hands-free perspective, which is simply being more present with our children by letting go of the millions of distractions that keep us from being present and connected in a mindful way. I've noticed, and I know many of my readers have noticed, that when we have these designated hands-free times, it actually seems to reduce sibling rivalry. And I wanted to ask your opinion. You know, is that true for most families, and why does that happen?
I think it's absolutely true for most families, and I think it's about presence.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we're fully present, children feel that. I think they're hungry for it.
Yes.
We talk about it as connection. They want to connect with us, but it's even more than connection. I think when we're present, I think our love comes through in a whole different way. And I think children follow presence.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is all of us follow presence.
Exactly.
But children are really attuned to it. And they know what matters. They live much more in the moment than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And when we move into that moment with them, there's more aliveness, there's more connection, and their needs are met in a bigger, deeper way. So they're happier, they're more whole, and they're not just bickering with each other or
right. Pestering
each other because they're feeling better.
I agree. And I feel like when I'm present with my daughters and maybe we're out in the driveway playing a game or ball and I'm part of participating in it, it seems like everything flows better and they're laughing and having fun. And so just like you said, I think that just that presence, it makes them feel alive and accepted. And so I really appreciate you talking about, you know, that the how that hands-free dynamic helps with the sibling rivalry. Now, let's be honest, we all know that siblings are going to fight. It's just part of human nature. And so it's really hard, I think, to decide, well, we should let them work it out, or we need to step in and intervene. How do we distinguish between stepping in or letting them work it out?
I think that we have to give them tools first.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the research shows on this is actually pretty surprising. When we just ignore their fights,
mm-hmm.
children tend to bully each other.
Oh.
Unless they've been taught ways to resolve their differences respectfully. And there are household expectations that the rule in your family is that you treat each other with respect. Now, it's also true that if you just jump in and you lay down the law and you say, you know, wait a minute, you're the big brother, you should know better, you know, or don't you grab that from your sister, you know, it's her turn, or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you're the one mandating what's happening, there will actually be more fighting. There's also research on that.
Mm-hmm.
So you might wonder, well, what am I supposed to do? I can't jump in to solve it, and I can't, you know, ignore it. So is there a right way? And actually, there is. The research shows that there is a way to intervene, and that is to acknowledge that both kids are having a problem that they want to solve, and to sort of uphold your household rules. So, whoa, I hear some loud voices.
Yeah.
You two don't sound happy. So you're recognizing that there's an issue.
Okay.
You're acknowledging that both kids have a problem. Even if you think one kid's causing the problem, both children are having a problem. You're not blaming one or the other. And then you say, those words could be hurtful, right? Mm-hmm. So you're acknowledging that there's something going on that's hurtful, if there's mean voices going on, and that's not your family role. You can tell your sister. You can tell your sister in a way that doesn't attack her, right? So that you're setting the expectation that they can say what, you know, you can tell your brother how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look like you're having a good time, Josh. Are you still having fun with this game? You can tell your brother how you feel. So you're coaching your kids to stand up for themselves.
Yeah.
That's a very important skill to avoid the bullying that I just referred to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're saying to the kids, you know, you can tell your brother how you feel without attacking him, right? So because when you tell Josh that he can tell his brother how he feels, he might say, I feel like you're an idiot, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not a feeling. That's an attack. So you can say, you can tell your brother, how do you feel, Josh? You know, I feel sad. That's how I feel. You're not letting me have a turn, or you're knocked down my tower, or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he can tell his brother how he feels without attacking, right? So you're basically coaching kids to learn to stand up for themselves and express what they need and want with the other person, and to set boundaries on the other person's behavior. Those are really essential skills in life.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Right? And you're expecting them to do it without attacking the other person. So as you do that, kids learn the skills to do it themselves. So the question about when you intervene is when you see them not using those skills.
Okay.
So in the beginning, they may not know those skills until you coach them
when
you first start doing this. But once you do this for a couple of months, you'll hear your children. It's amazing. It'll take some reminding in the beginning, but you'll hear your children begin to say, you know, wait a minute. I was using that. Please give that back. You know, and you'll be, wow, right? Which is a whole different thing than, I hate you. I don't want you for a brother, right?
Right. Well, and I can see how this would expand, you know, you're modeling this for them, and they're using it at home in this safe environment. And once they become accustomed to listening to your dialogue, they're going to start using that same dialogue out in the real world, in the classroom, maybe even helping peers, being mediators for their peers. And like you said, what a gift that you're giving your child to work these things out and empowering them.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. I think we need more people in the world who can do this. And imagine if we all learned it in childhood.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Talk about, you know, road rage and people overreacting over minor things. They're not learning this type of conflict, peaceful conflict resolution at home. And just think, if we all started doing this, what a great world it would be.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So, Dr. Laura, I've written about my personal experience with having a supportive sister, and from the early age, you know, we fought, of course, like all sisters do, but my sister Rebecca was always expressing her belief in my abilities and that I could do things that I didn't even think I could do. And as a result, I became an author because my sister believed in my abilities as a writer. And so I attribute so much of my success to my sister. And when I share how her support and her love impacted me on my blog, I've had people who express from the opposite decide what criticism from their siblings did over time to really just beat them down and really create a lack of self-confidence within them. And so there was a little controversy on one of the posts where some people were saying, well, no, your siblings can't have that power over you. And someone was saying, well, yes, they can. And so I would like to hear what your opinion is. Do you believe siblings can shape a person's self-concept? And what are ways we can help our children build each other up rather than tear each other down?
I absolutely think siblings can impact greatly mm-hmm. how we feel about ourselves in the world. When you think about it, brains are very plastic in the first 7 years. So the people with whom you interact in the first 7 years will have the greatest impact on you.
Okay.
And that's how you learn about relationships. So now there are people who have a larger gap. You know, the baby wasn't born till they were 8 or 9 or 10. And those are different kinds of relationships. They're still sibling relationships, but it's a little different. It's more like being a parent almost or an aunt or uncle to that child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when we are within 7 years of each other, we can assume that that child is shaped. Or even if we're older, you know, my brother was born when I was 12. I think I really helped shape who he became, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I took care of him so much when he was a baby. So we absolutely have a huge impact on each other as we're growing up. And how can we make sure that's a positive impact? I think the controversy on your blog was partly that sometimes that impact is positive and sometimes it's
mm-hmm.
negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
if you were lucky enough to have it be positive, you can't, then you know it was important to you and you can't imagine, you know, how it could be otherwise.
Yeah.
And if it was negative, I think often we shut out the sibling and we try to act like mm-hmm. it didn't matter to us. But I think
okay.
it's very painful and we carry that with us throughout our lives, that wound. So I do think it profoundly affects us no matter what, our siblings. And how do you make it positive? I think this is part of our job as parents. You know, it's a funny thing having children. We're not given any guidance on it when we have kids.
Right.
You know, the only we're given guidance about health, right? Like, you know, put them in a car seat, you know, make
yes.
sure they have a bike helmet, don't smoke around them, don't drink while you're pregnant. But we don't talk about the fact that we have this sacred responsibility
mm-hmm.
to help a child flower as who they are in the world, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we don't ever really get taught, if we didn't grow up with it, ways to nurture that feeling of support in the family.
Mm-hmm.
There's research that shows that one of the most important things we can do to help the sibling bond flourish
mm-hmm.
is to teach kids that this is something that really matters, to actually have an expectation that
yes.
we're family, we support each other, and to explicitly teach that value. You know, we take care of each other, we always work together to work things out, of course we get angry at each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, conflict is a part of every human relationship. Of
mm-hmm.
course we get mad at each other sometimes. You can be mad at someone you love. Our commitment is that we always work things out with each other,
mm-hmm.
and we appreciate each other, we celebrate each other, we honor differences. We celebrate differences so that, you know, it's fine that one child loves baseball and the other child loves soccer and the other child loves basketball or
mm-hmm.
different kinds of ice cream or whatever. We're all different. Yes, you know, Sarah likes it when things are quieter. You know, Helene loves lots of noise and commotion. That's what she thrives on. And sometimes that makes it hard for you to be sisters because you like different environments, but that doesn't mean you can't appreciate each other, right?
That's
so
nice.
Being able
mm-hmm.
to speak to the differences and just to talk about how lucky your children are to have each other. You know,
mm-hmm.
what's your favorite thing about having a sister? Or just in your family to, on a regular basis, talk about what's the coolest thing that Emily has ever taught you, right?
Oh, that's neat.
Right? And
mm-hmm.
I urge people to make a book when a new sibling is born, or maybe not right when they're born, but when they're a year or two old, that both children read if you have two, or that all three read if you have more than two or three or four, that you read the book about each of them, and it includes that it, you know, begins, you know, once upon a time there were three little girls who lived, you know, in a pink house with their mom and dad and whatever, and the things they liked to do, and, you know, Sarah loved this, and, you know, Adrian loved that, and, you know, what the different girls loved to do. But one thing they all loved to do was to snuggle up under the covers and watch a movie and eat popcorn together, and so-and-so liked this kind of movie, and so-and-so liked that kind of movie. So there's both difference and togetherness in it. And sometimes there are fights. So in the book, you would say sometimes, you know, Addie wanted to play with her big sisters, and they weren't always able to play with her. Sometimes they had homework or they had friends over, and Addie was sad. But sometimes they all played together, and it was so wonderful. And Addie knew that her sisters loved her no matter what. So you can also make the book from one child's point of view if that child's having a hard time. You can make each of them a book that's really from their point of view but about their sisters that celebrates the family. That's a more ambitious undertaking. But really what I'm trying to say is that there's a way to establish in your family this expectation of siblings really loving each other and enjoying each other.
Well, and I think of those, I call them boundaries, because when I was a teacher in my classroom and one day a little boy called another boy a jerk, and I said, no, we don't use that word here in our, this is our home, and we don't talk to each other that way. And when I became a mom and I realized, you know, I had those same kind of expectations within my home, we don't call each other that. And I will admit, it bothers me when I hear other brothers and sisters that are not my own children, you know, talking to each other that way. And I think that needs to come from the parents to say, no, this is your lifelong, forever friend who is going to go through your whole life. You're not, why would you call them, you know, stupid or fat? And so that leads me to my next question. I would love just to hear what would you say if your child says to the other one, you're fat or you're stupid? How would you react?
I would treat it as a very big deal, not in the sense of punishment, but in the sense of stopping, taking a deep breath, and saying, whoa, wow. You must be so upset to use hurtful words like that with your sister. You must be so upset at her. It sounds like you're trying to hurt her feelings, and I'm sure it worked. Are you mad at your sister, or are you just upset in general? Are you just having a hard time right now in general? Because those are not words that we can use. Those are not words that we use in our family.
Yeah.
If you're mad at your sister, I expect you to find a way to tell her without attacking her.
That's good.
And if you're just upset, I want to hear about it, and I want to help you. But it's not okay,
ever,
to call names in our house.
Okay. That's great advice. Thank you for clearing that up.
And I think we forget. I've had parents say to me, but that's just the way brothers are with each other.
Right.
There's all that teasing. There's all that rivalry. And I say, well, only if that's the expectation you've allowed to have happen in your house, that's the way brothers relate. It isn't the way all brothers relate.
Good point.
How many relate, but it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. That's huge. Yes, that's huge. And so you touched on this a little bit in what you just talked about, the differences. But one of my most popular posts was called Children Who Shine From Within. And so I compared the firefly's light to the butterfly, and one has a quiet strength that is not so obvious, and the other one has a vibrant, obvious strength or gifts. And so when that post came out, it resonated very deeply, and I even heard from even some teenagers who said, I am a firefly. I have a quiet strength, and my sister or my brother is the one who comes home from the awards ceremony and has all these awards, and I feel like my parents are more proud of that child than me. And so I just want to ask you, what can we do at home, just, you know, because society really does celebrate those more, the more obvious gifts and strengths rather than the more creative, quiet ones, or just even qualities of kindness that aren't, you don't get an award for those. So I know you touched on it a little bit, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about how can we make both of our children, or all of our children, no matter their differences, how can we make them feel known and loved and accepted?
Rachel, I love that post of yours. It moved me to tears. And I think, yeah, if there's anyone listening to this who hasn't read Children Who Shine From Within on your blog, they need to go read it, because I think every parent, it should be required reading. You know, what you said is so telling. You described that the awards at school or the awards, in the church or on the baseball team are given to the kids who shine most brightly. And in your blog post, you refer to those kids as the butterflies, the ones everyone notices. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's right, but you said something else. You said, when I come home and my brother got that award and I didn't, I feel like my parents value that, and that really hurts. I think what's most wounding to our children isn't that they didn't get the award at school. It's the way the parents respond. That's where the deepest wound is. Of course they wish, we all wish we were that person getting the award at school, every one of us. And it's because every one of us has a secret fear that we're not enough, just as we are. And every child has that fear. The butterflies and the fireflies, all of them have this fear that they're not enough. But when we, so you said, well, how can we handle this as parents to help our children to each one of them flourish with their own unique gifts? Mm-hmm. I think we can start with what we value. So it's really partly looking inside at yourself. It's easy to be seduced by flashy accomplishment. And our society gives very mixed messages. One message is that we give kids is be kind. You know, as you just said, to do something loving in the world. I think in your post you say to save the seat on the bus for someone so that they're not taking the humiliating walk all the way to the back of the bus when they get on in the morning. Yeah. You know, there are many ways that our children might be kind that will be completely overlooked by the world, right? But the question is, as parents, are we actually valuing that as much, or are we valuing the accomplishment? So I'm thinking about one dad who's a basketball player and coach who has a four-year-old, and his four-year-old had read a book with his mom about being kind, and one of the things you do when you're kind is you offer somebody your place in line. So this boy was at gymnastics, and he was offering everybody a place in line in front of him. And he never got his turn to do this station on the ramp or whatever it was. And he didn't mind. He had a really great feeling in his heart that he was giving these other kids a turn. Now, of course, some of the kids were having their second turn and he hadn't had his first. So we do want to teach kids the balance. I think that's always the balance between human beings. How do I take care of me but also take care of you at the same time, right? Like how can I extend that generosity to you and also not be sacrificing myself? And I think that's a fundamental human dilemma that we all work with our entire lives and that we need to offer guidance to our children about. But I'm thinking of this dad who said to his son afterwards, but that's not what you're supposed to do. It's your turn. I mean, he wasn't exactly telling his kid to elbow the other kids out of the way, but he sort of was. He was saying, now, what do you do next time? Yes, you step right up. It's your turn. You get in line first, you know. And I thought, well, this poor child is getting mixed messages because we do want both things for them. We want them to achieve their own dreams, to accomplish something, and at the same time, we want them to be kind people. So I think we need to get some clarity about our own values and really reflect on them and talk about them with our partner and talk about them with our children, talk about exactly that dilemma that I just posed at the dinner table with kids, you know, with our children, say, you know, I heard this story. What do you think the parents should say to the child? What do you think the child should do? And when we pose those questions to our children, they're very interested because these are the salient issues of their lives. And we're transmitting values. What we value is what our children will grow up knowing is valuable. So if what we value is those school awards, and we're not valuing that our other child is an artist, is sitting there strumming the guitar and writing songs all day.
Right.
And is not winning awards, that's true, but is putting her passion into music,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole different kind of way of contributing to the world, right? So
right.
what we value is what they're going to value. That would be number one. The second
mm-hmm.
thing we talked about, celebrating differences, being yourself as a strength in the world. Talking about
yeah.
that with your children is critical because, again, it's a salient issue. They know that to be one of the cool kids, they have to give up something about who they are. And so it's always, always, once they're past the age of, well, for girls, past the age of 4 or 5, but even for boys, it happens pretty early that they become aware of the pressures of the group. And if they want to be one of the in crowd, they have to be a certain way. And so to talk to them about differences and authenticity and what you have
mm-hmm.
to give up to be accepted is a really important thing. And then finally, I would say any child, every child needs to be listened to when they're having a hard time, not
mm-hmm.
talk them out of their feelings. And I think you say this so beautifully in the post where your daughter's wondering if she's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, you can always tell me this. I will never diminish that. I will never
mm-hmm.
make light of it. I will never tell you it's not something that should hurt you because I understand it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it doesn't matter what our child is upset about. If it hurts them, they need to be heard. And that just listening, just seeing them
yeah.
will help them heal and work it through and find their own inner strength.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you for that, breaking that down for us. And so I really like that in your book you stress the importance of one-on-one time with each child. And I know from my experience, when I have my daughters alone, I see a whole new side to them that I don't
yes.
see when they're together, and especially the little one who talks more and shares more about what's going on in her little head that I don't get to hear when my older daughter is around. So I love that. This is one of the common questions I get from a lot of my readers is, what do you do when you have more than one child? You know, what would be a practical way to figure out this one-on-one time, you know, on a regular basis?
Well, you're the right person to be talking with about this because your whole huge gift to the world is about noticing what's actually important
mm-hmm.
and moving, you know, sort of just letting the extraneous distractions go
mm-hmm.
and moving into what's important. I think often we don't understand what's important. And so we think, well, I did spend time with them. I was with all three of them or
mm-hmm.
both of them. And in fact, it's imperative to spend the one-on-one time. And we don't understand how important it is until we do it.
All right.
Right. And so I think part of it is understanding that that is critical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being honest with ourselves about the ways in which we let that get in our way. I think that you start off Hands-Free Mama by asking the reader to notice the cost to us
mm-hmm.
of our engagement with not just our devices, but our pressure to be productive. And
mm-hmm.
so I would ask parents to notice the cost of not spending time alone with each child. I just think it's a critical thing to do, and I think there needs to be time every single day. It doesn't have to be a half an hour with each child.
Right.
But some time where they know they can count on you. And
mm-hmm.
often parents do that at bedtime, and I think bedtime is a really important time to do it. But that's not quite enough because at bedtime then they get flooded with all the things that they want to tell you that are bothering them,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it harder for them to sleep.
That's
so,
a good point.
Right. It's ideal if there can be some other time.
Yeah.
You know, if your kids are young, it might be while you're sitting with them while they're in the bath, or it might be while you're braiding their hair, or it might be, you know, after they first get home from school that you
yeah.
spend a few minutes with each one while the others are doing homework or
mm-hmm,
whatever,
mm-hmm.
depending on the age of your children. But I do think a little bit of one-on-one time every day is critical, and then a longer time, if you can't find longer times during the press of daily life,
mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm.
find a longer time on the weekend. So that's the first thing is you have to know it's important. And then you really have to schedule it in because,
mm-hmm.
as we know, You know, until I started scheduling in time for meditation, you know, meditation is sacred. It shouldn't really be on your to-do list. But for me, if I didn't put it on as the very first thing I did every morning, I didn't do it. And I think that's the way it is with our children. If we don't say, this is my priority,
yes,
this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to find this time with each child. So if it's a priority, you'll notice, oh, the other one is busy doing X, Y, Z. You know, he's playing with his Legos. I see she's drawing. I could just go sit with her quietly and notice her drawing. Oh, you're using a lot of blue today. Yes, Mommy, that's the ocean. Really? Wow. And these are the waves. Now she's starting to open up to you. Now she's going to tell you what's in her ocean. That's really a value that she's sharing her inner world. Even if nothing big or overt comes from it, you're building trust, you're building connection, and the next interaction you have will be deeper. So I think just noticing those moments when I know what you'll think. You'll notice that he's playing with his Legos and she's drawing, and you're thinking, I've got to go do the dishes. You know, I've got to make that phone call to the pediatrician. Yes, maybe you do have to make the phone call before the pediatrician closes, but whenever possible, go sit with one of them and spend a few minutes and alternate which one you choose, obviously, so that they both feel like they get that opportunity to just feel seen and significant to you.
That's a great point. And I do think the more you start looking for those opportunities, the more you see them. And I feel like that was one of the most helpful parts for me to becoming less tied to my distractions, was to seize these opportunities. And like you said, not necessarily did something, you know, earth-shattering come out of their mouth, but there was always something tender or loving or just something that touched me that happened in that just a small increment of time where I stopped what I was doing and I just sat down with them and gave them my full attention. And I would always look back on those moments and say, oh my goodness, I would have missed that if I hadn't stopped and just taken that time. And over time, those little 5 or 10 minute increments of one-on-one, they can really add up to something quite significant and really strengthen your bond. So I do try to tell people when they say, well, I don't have much time, or my life circumstances are really bad right now. And I say, it really doesn't take much time, but the key is to be all there in that time.
Yes, it changes everything in the message you're giving your child. What they get, their takeaway from that is, this human being, this parent on whom I depend more than anyone in the world, is fully present to me. What happens when we're fully present is great love moves through us and connects us to that child, and our child is in the embrace of great love. And you're right. What happens then is transformative for the relationship. Even those tiny moments, I seem to recall a moment where you went and you were making a peanut butter sandwich for your daughter, and you went and sat with her on the couch, and she kissed your hand.
Yes.
Yes, and that can change your life that moment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we definitely have many areas of overlap with, and I think that's probably why I'm always recommending your site or your book, because the things that you talk about and I talk about, well, they go hand in hand, and I just appreciate the practical tools and the research provided by you that kind of backs up the things that I experience, and then you allow me to say, oh, I understand why. So, you know, I've gone through all my questions. Is there anything that you have on your mind?
Well, I'm curious. I hear you're writing another book.
Yes.
I'd love to hear about it.
Yes, I have another book coming out. My second book is coming out on September 8th. It's called Hands-Free Life, 9 Habits for Overcoming Distraction, Living Better, and Loving More. And I think it's a beautiful segue from the first book, which was really, Hands-Free Mama was really about ridding yourself of all the tiny millions of distractions that sabotage your moments and really focusing on the external distractions in your life. Whereas in the second book, Hands-Free Life, we're going to go deeper and we're going to make more lasting changes that really actually change your entire perspective. And from there, you can begin to make choices about your life that may feel a little uncomfortable and against the tide of what society tells you is important, but the changes will impact your life and your relationships in just a profound way. And so I'm really excited about sharing that part of my journey, which is deeper and more painful, but it seems like when I do share some of those really hard feelings, people out there are saying, I thought I was the only one. And there's great hope in knowing that we are not alone in our struggles. And so I'm just very excited about Hands-Free Life and hope that it can reach many people who are just trying to figure out a way to put more meaning in their lives and to make it a life of living and breathing and loving and creating rather than a life of managing, stressing, yelling, you know. So it's really trying to have a more positive existence.
Wow, so needed. You know, this takes me back to when I first read Hands-Free Mama, and I thought that the devices that take our hands away from our children and our loved ones are really the tip of the iceberg, at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
What's next once you move the devices out of the way is that internal pressure that says, I'm not good enough unless I'm overtly productive, unless I can produce this and this and this and this, right?
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, it's back to that conversation we just had about our values. What are we teaching our children about what's important? And so I love the idea that you're taking us a step further, it sounds
mm-hmm.
like, to understand what really matters,
mm-hmm.
because that changes who we are. It also
yes.
changes how we show up with our children very profoundly, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And if we can pass that perspective on to our children, you know, I think about so much of my life that I missed out on because I was so worried about what other people thought or what I was
mm.
supposed to be accomplishing or crazy, unrealistic goals. I miss so much. And if I could empower my children from the early stages of life to be able to distinguish what matters and what doesn't, I think, wow, that would just be an incredible gift, and I can't really think of anything more that I would like to give them.
Mm. You know, it's interesting that this is what your book is about because there is so much overlap here. I'm thinking about at the beginning of my book on siblings, I say,
mm-hmm.
you know, if your children are fighting a lot, just stop everything else you're doing and prioritize
mm-hmm.
that. Go be with them. Go be fully present with them. Get down on the floor with them.
Yep.
And nothing else matters. You know, you can serve them, you know, whole wheat crackers and cheese and carrot sticks for dinner if you have to. What matters is
right.
that you're raising human beings. You're shaping their relationship with each other. You're shaping their very brain if they're under the age of 7. And so
yeah.
the time you spend sitting on the floor with them present will transform their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what that's such a fundamental truth. And it's, you're right, completely counter to the pressures that
mm-hmm.
we all feel in our culture.
Yes.
As mothers especially, I think. But as everyone, as any parent,
yeah.
as any person. Yeah.
And that's what a lot of readers I hear from. They say, for the first time in my life, someone's giving me permission to say, okay, it's okay to just let this stuff go. Right now, there's nothing more important than being with my child.
Mm.
And that's just refreshing to so many people who have been thinking that it's wrong, and they're seeing just a weight lifted from their own shoulders because I feel like those moments of connection, they're not just benefiting my child. They're restoring me. They're just giving me a chance to breathe. And suddenly all these things I had piled up in my head, like I got to do this. That kind of gets in perspective, you know? And so you think, well, how can I make the moments matter? It's almost like building blocks. You just start right here with 5 minutes and just enjoy this moment. And then it just becomes reinforcing to you. And pretty soon it becomes a daily habit. And pretty soon it becomes a life of living, not managing, stressing, or yelling. And
yes,
that's just, it has to start with those little moments, those little 5 or 10 minute increments.
Yes. And you know, it changes everything, because when you change that way and just start showing up for those 5 minutes, the child changes also.
Mm-hmm.
And children feel more connected to us, and therefore they actually cooperate more. So you do, even if you're not intending to yell less, which we all are always intending to yell less, you end up yelling less because your child cooperates more, but also because you feel more connected to your child, so you see it from her point of view more. So it changes. It's like a huge ball rolling downhill that gathers weight, a snowball, because maybe that's, we need a more positive image for that, but I'm thinking of the fact that it gets easier and easier, actually. You're not pushing that rock uphill. It's actually taking on a life of its own, this ability to be present and not be stressed and not be yelling, because actually it changes the way your child is with you. And it does, as we pointed out in the beginning, reduce sibling rivalry.
Exactly. Oh, it's just so powerful how so many benefits come from our loving presence.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. This has just been so enlightening and just so affirming. I know some readers will listen and they'll think, I need to start doing this. And some readers will think, oh, I'm doing this. And that's affirming to hear if you're already doing something and you know just to continue to do that as they grow.
Yes.
And so I'm just so grateful for the work that you do and for all the people that you help. And I know that I'm constantly, you know, recommending you, and I just hope that you continue to do this for a very long time, because we need you.
Well, and right back at you, Rachel.
Thank you.
When Hands Free Mama showed up, I thought, wow, this book was sorely needed, and I can't wait to see Hands Free Life.
Oh, well, I appreciate you very much, and thank you for this wonderful conversation.